All right. October's book for the book club is Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. The synopsis, according to Amazon, is in the year 2044, reality is in an ugly place. The only time teenage Wade Watts really feels alive is when he's jacked into a virtual utopia known as the Oasis. Wade's devoted to his life to studying the puzzles hidden within the world's digital confines, puzzles that are based on their creators' obsessions with pop cultures of the decades past and that promise massive power and fortune to whoever can unlock them. But when Wade stumbles upon the first clue, he finds himself beset by players willing to kill to take the ultimate prize. The race is on, and if Wade's going to survive, he'll have to win and confront the real world he's always been so desperate to escape. All right, so what did everybody think of Ready Player One?
Tim, you want to start?
Well, I did enjoy this book. I read all the various references in the, such as from Airplane, the Don't Call Me Shirley reference.
Yeah, I enjoyed the book thoroughly. You know, I think it's one of the most entertaining books I've read in recent memory.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. I would say it was actually really good. Like, when I first heard about it from you guys, I was kind of leery about it, but after reading it, I think it was amazing.
Yeah. So, what were your favorite video games as a kid, since Ready Player One basically deals with video games of the future and James Halliday, the creator's favorite video games from the 80s?
Well, I'd say for one, I really enjoyed Sonic the Hedgehog 2. It's one of the obvious video games I really will play.
What about you, Michael?
Let's see. When I first started playing video games, it was Nintendo 64, and we had two games. It was Mario Kart 64 and GoldenEye 007. GoldenEye 007 is still one of my favorite shooters.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. We used to play that all the time. One of my very first game system I had was a Super Nintendo. And my parents bought that for me on my fifth birthday. And I remember I had Donkey Kong Country. What was Battletoads versus Double Dragons. And a few other ones. And I remember we just played the heck out of every single one of those over and over again. But probably my favorite games, I loved Donkey Kong Country when I was a kid. And I actually had this really awesome Spawn game, which for a 5-year-old, probably you shouldn't have, but my grandma just bought it out of randomness. I guess she had no idea what it was, and turned out it was an M-rated game for the Super Nintendo. And so it was pretty great, though. But a little later, I remember, of course, Michael said 007, GoldenEye was awesome. I think every guy played that as a kid if they had a 64. Conker's Bad Fur Day was awesome. Street Fighter, all those were awesome.
Yeah.
No, it was not gonna Street Fighter. I think it was the mechanics.
Oh yeah.
Like, it took me.
So.
Okay.
Since we. Do what, Tim?
As I was trying to say, it took me a long time. That Super Street Fighter 4, what it was on 360. That was actually the big part of how you can. I still don't really know how I was doing it.
If we go to fighters, if we're talking about fighters, some of my favorite games were fighters as a kid. I love Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. I actually had a really odd game that I've not really played ever since when I was a kid, but it was called Clay Fighters. I don't know if you guys ever played that, but me and my friends when we were young played that a whole lot, and it was kind of odd. It was you were these clay monsters and fighters that basically was Street Fighter, but you were made of clay.
The thing was Tenmo GT Final Battle.
Yeah, I actually remember, Timmy, when we played that back at your house on the original PlayStation. I was going to say, since we're all children of the 90s, we may have missed out on a few of the cultural references. Were you confused at all by any? If so, which ones?
Yeah, I pretty much more or less got all the references I noticed.
There was a few I was a little lost on that I had to look up online. Like, I remember Halliday's favorite game being, what was it, the Black Panther game, and I really had no idea what that was.
Like, the only real weapons I couldn't identify anything about Final 2, the book itself stops and explains.
Yeah, that is true. The book explains a lot. What about you, Mike?
I got pretty much most of them. My mom was really big in the 80s, so I got to listen to a lot of that music.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid.
Rush is one of my all-time favorite bands, and that was one of my favorite references where they talked about
the 2112 came out. That was amazing.
This is one of my favorite references, of course, was the telephone booth where with like drawings.
I gotta say, I think my favorite reference was the Pac-Man, because I spent a lot of time playing that game when I was a kid.
You know, actually, I figured that out. I don't always get to do some things, but the quantity of Pac-Man, I was able to deduce what that one was.
Oh, you know, the Mario?
Typically, with those things, I thought that's going to come to be important later, but I can't figure out how.
Should we say spoiler alert in case anybody is listening to this, but the book's been out for almost 3 years now, so I don't think it's not real necessary. Yeah, so if you are worried about spoilers, you might want to quit listening, because it might be fairly heavy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Copyright, it was 2011, so it's about 3 years old. Also, when I was looking something up on this book, I did see something about a movie in the Google Image Search. Not Image Search, but Google Search has said something about a movie we made.
Yeah, actually, I was listening to some interviews with the author, Ernie Klines, and he was saying that the same day he sold it to the books, he actually got optioned by, I believe, Warner Brothers to make a script, but they said he wrote the screenplay, and he actually is, one of his first things he did was he wrote the screenplay for Fanboys, which is, it's a Star Wars movie about a bunch of fanboys trying to make it to the Phantom Menace first screening, and they try to steal the Phantom Menace movie from Lucas Ranch beforehand so they can watch it. So he kind of knows his geek culture.
Which you could definitely tell in the book.
Oh, yeah. He actually drives a DeLorean for his own personal car.
I wish.
Yeah.
That'd be an awesome thing to have.
Yep.
Honestly, if I was to pick my three vehicles I would most want, it would be a Johnson DeLorean, the Batmobile from the Adam West Batman show, and the Impala, the Winchester Shrine, was natural.
What about, Tim, I thought you'd say the TARDIS.
This is an honey call.
Oh, I thought you said vehicles. Anyway, if I had to pick a vehicle, man, I just don't know. The Batmobile would be awesome from any Batman movie, really. What kid doesn't want the Batmobile?
Someone
knows,
I think, would have to be
passed on as tanks. I'd have to say the DeLorean if it has a real authentic flux capacitor.
Yeah, I just have to have modified if the DeLorean he has in the book.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about that, actually. Do you think that's a pretty original idea, or can it even be original if you're just stealing pieces from other things that have already been done?
The whole book?
Oh, no, the car that Wade has in the book.
Oh.
DeLorean with the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And all of that.
Well, I guess he's just showing how big of a nerd he is.
Well, also, it's in a video game, so he could... It pretty much was the exact thing. You know, you just upload... The company that makes Oasis probably just uploaded all these stock, you know, footage from movies and games and stuff into the game. But he also has the... Firefly fans out there, he has the Serenity ship, and it's named Kaylee after one of the main characters in the show, but he renames it the Vonnegut after one of his favorite authors and one of my favorite authors, Kurt Vonnegut Jr.
He also has an X-Wing.
Yeah, he does have an X-Wing. He,
I almost felt sorry for the people who he took the Serenity from.
Yeah.
But again, it's their fault because they attacked him.
What about you, Mike? What kind of vehicle would you have in Oasis if you could have any vehicle that's ever been thought up of in cultural history?
Honestly, if we're going with vehicles, I would have to say,
you don't want the car from Carrie, do you?
No. You mean Christine?
Christine, yes, yes.
Or anything the car may have as part of it.
There you go.
I gotta say, if I could pick any vehicle, it would probably be the, oh, what's that shit from Cowboy Bebop?
Oh, thing I know. Beto Bates?
No, 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 not Cowboy Bebop, sorry. What's that other...
Outlaw Star Wars?
Outlaw Star, that's it.
Yeah,
I'd have to go with that one.
Yeah, if you get into anime, there's all kinds of cool vehicles and rides and stuff.
And then, of course, everybody's favorite, the Gundams.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
One of my favorite parts of the book, spoiler alert.
Yes, the end of the book, Wade... He finds a little toy statue of a robot or whatever, and he picks it up, and it lets him pick any robot from all these choices. There's Gundams, Mechagodzilla, all these. I'm sure I'm forgetting a ton, but there's just all...
And the one he took was the mecha that there was a Japanese finance show when he used giant mecha, and that's what he used.
Yes. Leopardon?
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was pretty awesome. I thought that was one of the coolest parts of the book was at the very end, the epic battle. But what about you guys? Who was your favorite character? Because Wade has his own kind of a small group of the other hunters. I forget what they call them in the book, the ones who hunt the eggs.
It's the Gunters.
The Gunters, yes, the Gunters. There's a small group of Gunters that go along with Wade. His name is Parsival in the game. Named after the knight who discovered the Holy Grail in King Arthur legend.
And then he, because he misspelled it slightly, but the two things were taken.
Yeah, he has, there's a girl who's like a big blogger, and she's a famous gunter. Her name's Artemis, spelled with the three for the E. And it's funny, a lot of people still call her Art Three Miss. And it's just funny because Wade is like in love with this chick, and he's like, He does basically hero worship the whole time, and he finally actually meets her upon discovering the first key.
Yeah. I gotta say, my favorite character is probably H.
Oh, yeah, H is awesome. It's one of his best... It's pretty much his only friend in the game, and H has this badass chat room, and chat rooms in the game, you can have them design anything you want, and they played arcade games for always. They just always were playing arcade games, listening to Rush, playing instruments, doing fun stuff all day.
Like, they seem to be best friends, even though they had never really met each other before
birth. Also, Daito and Shaito, the two Japanese brothers, they were pretty cool characters at first because they were dressed up as samurai, and that's the two names of the swords that samurais carry. One's a longer one and one's a shorter one. And one was an older boy, one was a younger boy.
Yes, and they were my favorites.
They were pretty cool. I really liked them. And there was a quest later in the storyline where they went and did... I can't remember exactly what it was, but they got the robot. They got the Ultraman capsule.
Yeah, Wade got that, and then he gave it to them because he thought it was a Japanese company, should remain in the hands of the Japanese.
What about you guys? What were your favorite references in the book? If you had to pick a couple of your favorite references from the book, what would they be?
I gotta say, my favorite references and parts of the book were where they did the whole movie walkthrough, because I would play that game.
Which one did you like better, the War Games or the Monty Python?
Monty Python, obviously.
Oh.
Because Monty Python is amazing. But War Games was really cool, too.
I know Timmy's a huge fan of War Games. Would you play that game, Tim?
Yeah, I probably would stink at it, but I enjoy it.
I know Timmy likes that game. Personally, I liked that part as well. What other parts, Mike?
See, other references. Obviously, you said the Rush 2112 cave scene. Oh, there was another one I was thinking of.
We can come back. What about you, Timmy? What are your favorite, what were your, like, top two or three moments?
My favorite references?
Yes, sir.
That's kind of hard to say. I mean, I identify my two favorite references were what I said. The Tavares is playing Tavares and Don't Call Me Shirley.
Okay, well, I'll say mine. One of my favorite references is when, I believe, and he discovers the small, I think he has like a small unicorn or something, and he finally realizes it's from Blade Runner, which is my all-time favorite science fiction book and movie, and just one of my favorite books of all time, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick, and it's all about robots, and they're called replicants, and Harrison Ford in the movie plays Rick Deckard, who is what they call a Blade Runner. He tracks down these replicants that are so human-like you cannot tell the difference anymore, and you have to give them a test, and it's all moral and ethic questions. It's called a Voight-Kampff test, and Wade realizes he has to go to a planet that's it's only comprised of the Tyrell buildings, which Tyrell's the big company that makes all these, and so he goes there and he has to take the Voight-Kampff test and pass it. And then he also discovers what Michael was talking about. There's also a hidden part where if he stays back and he has to do pull a guitar from a stone, somewhat like the Arthurian legend of pulling Excalibur from the stone, and he has to play the complete guitar solo from Rush's 2112.
That's one thing that it's a very common mistake that a lot of people make. But Excalibur is not the sword on the stone. Excalibur is a sword of the lake.
Yeah, Excalibur is the sword of the lake, and then the sword in the stone is the one that makes him king.
Yeah, they're two completely separate things. Yep. And I'll come.
That's my mistake. My mistake, showing my lack of nerd knowledge.
Like I said, a lot of people make that mistake.
Yeah, it's pretty common. Arthurian Legend's one of those things where people mess up every little thing.
Yeah.
Because it's been adapted so many times in so many different scripts, it's just hard to come across one particular.
I'm trying to think of some of my other. I really, really liked the whole first key where he had to find it, and it was a Dungeons & Dragons, an old module from a Dungeons & Dragons game, because all three of us.
Horrors.
Yeah, all three of us have played Dungeons & Dragons extensively throughout our lives. We used to play in a campaign together multiple times, and so I loved all the Dungeons and Dragons aspects. And then I thought it was cool he had the Dungeon Master's Guide all pulled up, so he knew where every treasure was, every monster, and so he got out of the level unscathed, and he made it to the boss of the level, which was a Lich King, and he had to play Joust of all games against the Lich King.
He leveled up like, what, 20 times now?
Yeah. Yeah, and so he came out with all this awesome gear, and that's where he meets Artemis. Mm-hmm. What would you consider this to be under? It's, of course, sci-fi, but it has themes of dystopian future, science fiction, some fantasy, even because it all takes place in a virtual reality game. So could it really be considered dystopian future? Because really, the book itself is in the game, but the setting around the game is obviously a dystopian future.
Yeah. I would say it's truly a dystopian book because of the fact that you get all the outside views, like what happens in the real world. Especially right at the beginning, it tells you exactly what happened, like what's going on in the world, why everything's so bad. And honestly, one of my favorite things about the book is it's originally set in Oklahoma.
Yes, yeah. We're all from Oklahoma for you guys. So that is one of the coolest things about it.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we'd all be living in trailers stacked 30, 40 feet up in the air. But
yeah, that would be nuts.
Besides that, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I consider it dystopian. I have a hard time thinking. It's definitely not fantasy, I wouldn't say, but it does have ties of science fiction because you could really see this happening.
Yeah.
Because all of it is fairly accurate stuff that could happen in the future. With people playing MMOs how they do today, how they play for hours upon hours upon hours.
I've got to say, I'd be more inclined to play MMOs if they did have a virtual reality aspect, like the book does. Or, you know, Sword Art Online, or DotAssign, any of those MMO-based
yes.
things that have virtual reality.
It's really nice to bring that up, because I was going to mention that with his Oasis persona. I just picture on the Kirito on the SAO and that voice coming from it.
Speaking of those movies, games, stuff, what are some of your favorite virtual reality situations in books, movies, games, TV shows? Timmy mentioned Sword Art Online. That's a popular anime right now.
I gotta say, that's probably one of my favorites, but another favorite of mine is DotAssign. It doesn't really have much of a story. It's very comprehensible, but it is a very good show.
Yeah, like, you miss one episode, you're going to be screwed for a while on DotAssign.
Yes, one of my... I like, there's a few books that are really cool, which Ernie Cline actually said he... A few of these inspired him. There's William Gibson's Neuromancer, which is kind of one of the starts to what... Even Ernie Cline calls his book somewhat of cyberpunk. It's very similar to a steampunk type view, but it's all based on super high technology instead of minimal technology based on steam powers. But also there's Snow Crash by Neal Stephenson that it came out in the early 90s, and it's where actually the term avatars came from. And if you're familiar with the popular online, I don't know if you'd call it an MMO, but it's a virtual simulator online called Second Life, where people can build their own avatar, their own world, basically, and it's interactive. You can hang out with each other. They actually built their whole business proposition off that book of Snow Crash.
No, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, they're pretty good books if you never read them. Check them out. They're all about pretty much very similar to this, about avatars and virtual reality. What's real, what's not real. While reading the book, did you guys consider all the constant pop culture references more of a burden or an enhancement to the story?
I liked having all those pop culture references.
I did too. I felt like it added a whole other layer of like relatability just because of all the stuff they talked about. I mean, I'm sure as kids we all watched, you know, some of this Schoolhouse Rock and stuff like that are mentioned in the book. And we've all played most of those video games, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so we used my house was a hack location when we were 3 years and that number comes from.
Yeah, I enjoyed all the
relatability to the whole thing.
I actually enjoyed all the cultural references as well because it taught me the ones I didn't know. The ones I did not understand, I really enjoyed looking them up later. And I mean, I thought the whole idea of James Holliday's Anorak's Almanac was awesome. I wish there was something like that in real life. Some book with all these references and a video game that tied into it would be awesome. I totally would play a Ready Player One video game.
Yeah.
Just a game based on that would be awesome, but I would play Oasis.
Well, you're already an MMO gamer, Justin. You played World of Warcraft. Let's have you, Tim.
Yeah, we used to play MMO. Actually, we're playing...
I'm not sure if you guys remember the reference to Azeroth in the book, though.
What was it?
Did you guys catch that one?
It's slipping my memory right now if I did catch it. What is it?
It was basically just a little mention during the whole part about him talking about the Tyrell building.
Oh, cool.
Like, he was mentioning all the other worlds that were around that area, and there was one that was exactly Azeroth. They'd imported the entire world.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I love that they could make these infinite worlds, and you could play however you wanted to. You didn't even have to play the game if you didn't want to. There were sex slaves on the game. Which Wade's mom was, people did, like, the online brothels.
that reminds me, another of my favorite MMO virtual reality kind of thing references is the movie Gamer, which reminded me a lot of this book, actually.
I kind of like Gamer. It had pretty cool ideas and concepts.
Yeah. And then there's the whole difference is, though, instead of controlling a virtual reality character, you're actually controlling another human in Gamer. So...
Yeah, that was a really messed up concept. His wife was controlled by a big fat guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's how they had to make their money. They were prisoners, had to play Call of Duty, like, matchmaking games where they just killed each other, but you were really killing real people.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a cool idea. If it didn't have if it wasn't a shitty movie, it'd be pretty cool. But it had... It just had a lot of dumb parts and over-the-top action.
The movie Gamer 10?
Go ahead.
You should. Do you have any other references like that that you thought of?
Not off the top of my head.
Well, here's another question, then. Would you play a virtual reality version of World of Warcraft?
There we go. I think that's kind of a question off of... Being level 8 and a level question mark coming up and just killing me out of nowhere.
Yeah. That's why you gotta put it on the player versus environment.
The newest thing on the PvP server.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Tim did play on a PvP server, and sometimes that was a very big pain getting ganked by high level characters while trying to complete quests.
Yeah. That's one of the things I enjoy about Destiny as another MMO, is the fact that there's some separate zones for that, and you can do one or the other, or you can do both.
Yeah, that is awesome. That's actually one of the best parts about Destiny. There's story mode, and lack of story mode, but there's strike playlists, which are just basically instances off World of Warcraft, and then there's a matchmaking, which is just like matchmaking in any other shoot 'em up game like Halo or Call of Duty.
You have to get Destiny.
You should get an Xbox One first, though. You can play with us.
I'm not going to play with, I get PS4.
Console wars aside, everybody has their own opinion on which console is best, but see, that speaking of consoles, what did you guys think about the virtual reality box that you play Oasis on? It only costs $0.25 in the future to play.
My question is, did the value of money go down dramatically, or was that just really so inexpensively?
He was just so rich, he wanted everyone to be able to participate, and like school kids could get it for free or buy it for extremely cheap so that they all could go to private school online if they wanted to, so nobody would be denied education.
He actually explained that in the book about the whole creating of the game Oasis.
Mm-hmm.
He sold it for $0.25 because that was the price of an old arcade game to play one time. He felt like that $0.25 cost him so much freedom and gave him so much freedom away from his like limited outside world experience because he was a nerd and was constantly picked on, that whenever he sold it for $0.25, he was like, here, have your freedom for $0.25. Have what I had when I was a kid. And I actually think that is a great strategy for gaming. Sell it cheaply so you can sell more of them, not try to sell it at a really high rate.
Thinking back to it, I thought of another really cool part that will lead me into my next question. Okay, he talked about one of the very first RPG type games he played was Adventure. On like one of the old Commodore type computers or game like that, and it was just like, you know, kind of like a dungeon crawler or very, very remedial type game, but it had the very first Easter egg in it, which all of Ready Player One is based on Halliday's Easter eggs. And one of the creators back then, the creators for games didn't get credit for games on Atari and Commodore 64. The game company had the credit, and So the artist would put little Easter eggs in the game, like the one he's referring to. The guy who created it put his name inside of a hidden room that if you were lucky enough to find, you had to do all these quests and stuff, and then you'd find it, and it would say, created by so-and-so. And so game creators kept putting these Easter eggs in games. I was going to say, what are your favorite Easter eggs that you've ever found in a video game? Michael, do you know any Easter eggs that you've ever found in a game?
There have been a couple, but it's all been for sequels. Something like, I don't really remember. There's a lot of Easter eggs in sequels that also revert back to other games. Like in Dragon Age 2, there are like certain characters that pop up throughout the game.
Yeah.
Allude back to what a choice you've made in the first game, and it actually made you feel really good about what you did, or made you feel crappy because you see the end result.
Such as losing the character in the first Mass Effect and then playing 2, or like losing one in Dragon Age, and then they're not there for the second or third game.
Right.
Getting to Reg and Minnie in the Final Fantasy games?
Yeah, or how they have a different Cid in every single game.
There's almost always a Cid.
Definitely. Or like the Chocobos or Moogles. A few of my favorite Easter eggs in games are, there was an X-Men Origins game that came out around the movie. I think it was on the Xbox, PS2. Might have been even on the 360, but it was a Wolverine-based game, and there was Frostmourne, which is the Lich King from World of Warcraft's sword. There was a part where you could find it stabbed into the big chunk of ice, and there was also the hatch from the popular sci-fi show Lost, and I was a huge fan of Lost, so that was a really cool Easter egg. Dead Island had a really cool Easter egg where you could fight Jason Voorhees. There was this shack out in the middle of the woods, and the music started playing, and instantly, any fan of horror knows, oh my gosh, this is the Friday the 13th music, and Jason comes running out with his hockey mask on and a machete, and his name's actually Jason.
Well, let's see. Just Easter egg references, there's one that was told to me about in Bullets, the pre-sequel. There's a quest for pretty much make it Dalek.
Oh yeah, Borderlands is full of Easter eggs. A lot of their quest names and characters and stuff refer to other games, movies. I know that game is full. I only played the first one, but it's full of Easter eggs.
Hey, I think in the pre-sequel, that obelisk, not an obelisk, that stone tablet that's in 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
I found it somewhere.
That's awesome. Another one of my favorite ones is in Metal Gear Solid on PS1. There's a fight with one of the bosses named Psycho Mantis. And,
oh yeah, just you, the player 2 slot.
Yeah, he will make you switch your controller around. Your controller will just stop working, and if you don't know what to do, you're stuck, and he'll kill you. But the more you play, you learn. You switch your controller over to player 2. He also knows your save files, which at the time he's supposed to have psychic powers. He'll say, "You like to play Castlevania, don't you?" And you're like, "Oh my God, what is this?" When you're a kid, you're like, "What is going on?" And if you have a save file from Castlevania on your PS1 memory card, he knows. And I think it also did with Resident Evil. There was a couple games, and he would know which save files you had. And it would kind of creep...
Those are Capcom games, right?
Yeah, and it would creep you out. And I remember thinking that, like, oh my God, how does it know this?
Yo, I don't think we call this one an Easter egg or not, but... In Pokemon, in Red and Blue, just in the lateral side of Pokemon, lateral side of Rock Tunnel, there's the one that says, "The Pokemon are so chunky. This should be a pink one with a floor paddle." And this Pokemon was finally given to us in the fifth generation. There's something of, it was maybe just been something funny that they put in there, and they finally decided to make it. Now they really have no room playing for that long.
Huh.
So, when it was playing all along, why did it take so long to release it?
I don't know. I'm not real familiar with the Pokemon games and their lore and such. But I know we all like Star Wars, and there's a, in the Force Unleashed video game, there was a part on the planet Kashyyyk where the Wookiees live. There's a part where you see Jar Jar Binks frozen in carbonite. And so
I remember that.
Yep, and so that's an awesome part, thinking, oh, thank God someone got the guy, because Jar Jar Binks is just an asshole. Everyone hates
him. Everybody hates him.
Yeah. He's one of the worst parts of the prequel saga.
That's what happened to Jar Jar.
And it's sad to think Lucas put such a weird character as such a major role. He is the one, if you remember, that sets all of Star Wars into motion. He is the one who sets up the Republic vote for Palpatine to take complete control.
Yeah.
And
it's
so
odd how such an odd character can have such a big role. When in the first movie, all you see is him, and all you're thinking is, I wonder if he's going to die at the end of this movie, because I don't like him.
All I thought about Jar Jar Binks is, it reminded me of, like, blackface from the, like, 1920s and stuff, of, like, a racially profiled African-American. Some white guy pretending to him, acting stupid. Said, oh, me so sorry, master. And
Oh, yeah.
He just looked so goofy. He sounded goofy. That's all I could think about watching it. That's what it reminded me of.
I had forgot those movies existed for a while.
I wish we all could do that. But there's parts, but most of it kind of ruined Saga.
Yeah.
Also, there's one more Easter egg I really like that is one of my all-time favorites in all video games. It's there's a game on PS2 called The Summoner, and there's a part that was like a promotional teaser that they put out, but if you beat the game, they showed it at the end, and it was all the characters from Summoner and some characters from Red Faction, and they were playing their own version of D&D, and it's hilarious, and he's like, I want to cast Magic Missile. Well, you know, they go through the motions of that, and it's just hilarious. And it shows all the main characters wants to get drunk. And he says, are there any girls around? He rolls the dice. Yeah, there's a girl. He's like, well, I want to try to make out with her or whatever. And it's just really funny. If anyone's ever played Summoner, they know what I'm talking about.
You know, that reminds me, there's a DLC for Borderlands 2. It was the Countess in the first one playing a D&D-style game. And they were playing the characters of the second game. And there was at one point where there was this big black shape on the wall. And if you shot at it, you got a trophy for attacking the darkness.
Huh. Well, I think we should probably start wrapping it up here soon. But would you guys recommend this book to your friends or anyone else out there listening?
I would recommend it to anybody who's a fan of nerd humor, nerd anything.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I do too, and I think anybody interested, it kind of bridges a cool gap between what is hugely popular right now in young adult, which this book isn't young adult, but it fringes on the borders of it. It's still adult science fiction, probably like the 18 to 35-year-old category, but it really would be good for anybody because it's fun. It appeals to young boys, which is I think it's a great book to get young guys to start reading, or people who don't enjoy reading. This would be a great book for anyone who likes video games or stuff like that to pick up, and I think they would blow through it.
Yeah, and it's, with the acknowledgments, it's only 374 pages.
Exactly, so it's a quick read. I know we all read it in less than 2 weeks with confined schedules, and I mean, it was...
I read it literally 2 days.
There you go. That's, I mean, you can sit down, and it's just a fun read. I know I read, like, half of it in one day, and it was just a great read to... I bought a digital copy. I like the book so much, I'm going to buy a physical copy of it, because there's actually some cool... There's some funny references in the book that are not in the digital version. It's not really references, but Ernest Klein's actually put his own Easter egg into the novel, and there's some way you can find it, and it alludes to a URL code, and you go to this URL website, and then you can you essentially unlock the first, that's your first gate, and then he made a video game for the second gate and something else for the third gate, but the contest is already over because the book came out years ago. But he actually gave away a real DeLorean, and it's not a replica, it's just a straight DeLorean that I guess you can buy. He said they're like $50,000, and so he gave it away as the prize for the first person to solve all three of the gates.
I wish I'd have known about this years ago.
Exactly, yeah. Unfortunately, some of the best books you... Do what, Tim?
May not be a very powerful car, but it's a cool-looking one.
It's a great car. It's cool-looking. I mean, you probably get heads turning everywhere you drive in that car.
Yeah.
It's like reflective silver metal. Like, it'd be impossible not to see it.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to... any other questions or comments about Ready Player One?
Not that I can really think of.
Me either.
All right, so the next thing I want to talk about is our next book for November. We're doing The Maze Runner by James Dashner, I believe.
Yeah, it's James Dashner. I've got it right here in front of me.
And it's kind of funny. It's another similar, I guess you would call it dystopian future, because it's not post-apocalyptic that I know of so far. I'm not real sure. We were only reading the first book. But it's definitely, what do you call it? Like a dystopian future, maybe. It's pretty cool.
Really tell you a whole lot about what's going on.
No, it's very, very elusive so far. But what I've read is awesome, and that's what we're going to be talking about next month's podcast. But next week, or here in 2 weeks probably, we're going to be recording another podcast that's strictly video games, movies, books, television series, everything we're into right now, and we're just going to have, it's going to probably be a bi-weekly podcast, so make sure you check that out.
Spoiler alert, the first session's probably going to have a lot to do with Dragon Age.
Yes, Dragon Age, for whenever you're listening to it, comes out in about a week, and so Dragon Age 3 Inquisition to be... you know, straight
and I am excited.
Yes, me and Michael are both picking it up, so we're very excited, as we played the first two games, and so that's one game we're going to be talking about. I'm sure there'll be some movies. I'm sure we'll talk about other books we've read recently. I'm a big book reader, so that's what I do a lot in my free time. So anyway, Tim, any last comments?
Let's say just a note, the new Pokemon games, the remakes for Ruby and Sapphire coming out a week from Friday.
Well, there you go, you'll have something to talk about.
Lego Movie and Alpha Sapphire. Mm.
Michael, anything you want to add?
No, just Dragon Age, man.
Alright, well, you know what he's looking forward to. So, guys, this was a great first podcast over October's book club, Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. Everybody want to just introduce themselves one last, or I think we failed to do that at the start. We'll introduce ourselves now, and we'll in the future we'll try to do it at the start of the podcast. Mike?
I'm Michael, and I like RPGs, video game-wise. I like to read a lot of action stories. I'm really into fantasy stuff more than I am sci-fi. That's pretty much all there is about me.
Timmy?
Well, I'm into video games. I'm also big on some shows, such as Doctor Who, Supernatural, Flash, Arrow, Big Bang Theory.
Timmy likes TV.
Speaking of which, just say I heard the sad news that the actress that does the voice for Mrs. Waller just passed away.
Huh.
So I couldn't wonder what they're going to do with that. They're just going to...
Probably just use recopies of her voice, because that's all she was a voice.
Yeah, well, they might write a death before the end of the show.
That would be cool. I really quit liking Big Bang Theory, honestly, but... to get away from that, we're going to wrap this up. But I'm Justin. I'm fairly similar like Michael. So I love RPG video games, story-based games. I don't really care for multiplayer games all that much. I try to stick to one-player games, one-player stories. Book-wise, I read everything. I love fantasy novels. Science fiction is probably my favorite. I like memoirs, adventure books. I'm not real big on mystery. Or romance, obviously. But besides that, that's about all I enjoy to do. I like playing video games, reading. I like sports. But besides that...
Don't forget your movie collection.
Yeah, I'm a big movie buff. And we all enjoy movies, but I collect DVDs and comic books. Really, we like to call ourselves hobbyists. And that's where I think we're going to cut the show today. Thanks, guys.